When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Let's talk about Dr. Bear, the character, within the context of the story. So last episode, I sort of gave an overview of what the book is about and where some of the ideas came from. Now it's time to talk about some of the characters and where the ideas came from for them. So Dr. Bear is a sage hero, in my opinion. And why a sage hero? Where did that interest come from? And thinking about it, I realized that from a very young age, I was always really into vampire stories, which I don't think I talk about very much in any of my other places where I talk about storytelling. But when I was a kid, man, I dressed as a vampire for Halloween, I want to say like 4 or 5 years in a row when I was a little kid. And even when I thought I was done with vampire costumes, I remember there was 1 year I was like, nope, you know what? I want to be a vampire again. And I was trying to think, where did that interest come from? What was it about it? And the earliest example I can think of was seeing the comedy film with George Hamilton, Love at First Bite, which came out, I think, in 1979. I think I saw it on TV, or maybe we rented it on Laserdisc or something when I was really little. But yeah, loved that movie as a child. Have not seen it since I was a child. I don't know if it holds up. But as I did a quick browse of some of the plot of the story, it sounds like it's probably a pretty funny movie, but I'll see if I can go back and find out if I still enjoy it. But anyway, what was it? Like other ones that I watched when I was a kid. Now, this one I shouldn't have watched when I was a kid, which was Salem's Lot, which was a TV movie. I think it's based on a Stephen King book. It still frightens me when I watch it. That one I have watched recently. Fright Night. The Christopher Lee vampire films I remember seeing on our UHF station when I was like in middle school. Kolchak the Night Stalker. I remember watching that as a little kid too. My parents would let me stay up late to watch it because I don't know what it was about that show, but it captured me. Later on, films like Phantasm, which is not about vampires, but it shares some DNA in terms of like the way that the story plays out and like the characters within it. The Quatermass movies and stories. All of these grabbed me when I was young, but when I think about vampire films, I think about one of the things that really, I don't want to say frustrated me as a kid, but I think it kept my cognitive dissonance engaged, was these vampire stories always had a protagonist who was just like a regular person, right? They were like either a scholar or a priest, or some kind of, like a psychologist, I think is what the protagonist is in Love at First Bite. Although I would say the protagonist is actually Dracula, and the antagonist is the psychiatrist, is as far as my memory serves. But it's just like a regular person who really doesn't have anything going for them other than, you know, they have a curiosity or maybe a knowledge of lore and a sense of patience, or at least a stick-to-itiveness that helps them overcome this undead, ancient, supernatural creature, right? Now, as a kid, I found that incredibly frustrating. It's like, this is so scary, right? It because you're up against this, like, even as like a 5-year-old, I could sense that like a vampire represents something that is bigger than the whole world. It's older than everything. And it is so assured in its power that it doesn't even push the hero out of the way. It doesn't, like, he just like offers like these vague threats, like, hey, you better watch it. Don't mess with me. You'll regret it. And when I would hear those threats, I'd be like, man, get out of there, Van Helsing. You know, just let him have the people. It's too scary. It's too big. And you don't have anything to help you. Right? That I think is what helped me, or not helped me, but it kept me invested in the story because I was so worried about the hero. But now when I watch these stories or movies or read these stories, however I consume them, I am really taken by the patience and the curiosity and often desperation of these characters, because they are, you know, up against impossible odds, and all they've got like I said, is like a little bit of book learning, a little bit of curiosity, and a willingness to investigate and learn. And I think that that informed a lot of the structure of the story of Dr. Bear in the case of the Two-Face Statue. Because one of the sort of ideas I was exploring was, is like, boy, we are, in my experience, learning things takes a long time. And sometimes when we finally do learn, we realize that the knowledge or the learning that had to happen was right in front of us from the start, but we were just blind to it. And we get past our blind spots and finally overcome that. And I feel like that's something about the Sage Hero is like triggers that for me as well. So what else do I love about these kind of characters? They're heroes. Like, okay, so again, going back to being a child, like when I was a kid, I really wanted a hero who would come in like Kool-Aid Man and blast through the wall and just use immense power to knock down all of the bad guys and make it less scary for me. Very much like a child who just wants like mom and dad to get in the way of what's in front of them, right? Make it less scary for me, please. Like the end of Time Bandits, if anybody's seen that, really haunted me as a child because it ends with, spoilers, okay, if you haven't seen Time Bandits, this really old movie, and you want to see it without getting this ending spoiled, skip ahead about 30 seconds. But it ends with the kid finally getting home after this adventure, and his parent, like a piece of the devil is sitting in like a little like toaster oven, and the parents touch it and explode in front of the kid. And then he's left on his own to continue the fight against evil. And like it does this full pan back out into seeing like how small the kid is in the vastness of the universe. And as a child, I was like, oh God, that's unfair. Even Sean Connery rides away on the fire engine and winks at him like, you're on your own, son. Man, I hated that as a kid. Now I love it. I love it because I understand it. You know, like how impossibly overmatched we are by everything. And I think that that's also part of what makes this kind of hero appealing to me as well, is that Dr. Bear doesn't have any powers. He just has encyclopedic knowledge of occult matters. He is physically overmatched, and it's even emphasized by the fact that he's a little tiny teddy bear. He doesn't even have fingers. He's got little nubs for hands. So all he's got is his wits and his curiosity and his stick-to-itiveness, right? Another one I think of, a film that grabbed me when I was, I want to say, in middle school and remains one of my favorite horror films of all time, is The Prince of Darkness. And when I think about that movie and what I find appealing about it, the whole thing is appealing to me. But my favorite scenes are the part where the scholar and the priest are sitting in an office, like a little like study or a den, and just discussing what they think is happening. Just the two of them just putting their heads together going like, what do you suppose is going on in this weird old church where like this tub of green goo is slowly possessing everybody? And yeah, the thing that is the most memorable to me about that movie is these two old men who just like to think a lot, trying to put their wits against literally the Satan and Satan's dad. Oh my gosh, I love that movie so much. So I think there's also an element of the Sage Hero where, because they're so overmatched, it's not about like, you know, punching up and reaching for the man upstairs and finally, there's also like a strategic element to what they have to do. Like Van Helsing has to wait for the right time. You can't take Dracula on at 11 o'clock at night. You got to wait for sunrise and you got to find where his coffin is and you got to set the coffin on fire or put the stake through the heart or whatever. There's like a procedure and there's a waiting for the right moment. Even though the danger is slowly creeping up. Oh my gosh, he bit the girl again. She's starting to turn. She's getting hypnotized and she's sleepwalking and whatever. Yeah, well, try to keep an eye on her. Because we got to wait till tomorrow to do something about it. Which again is one of those things that as a child I found so frustrating, right? When parents would say like, well, we'll get one next week. We'll do that next summer. Next summer might as well be never. Thanks, mom and dad, right? But the patience of the Sage Hero kind of points to like the wisdom of that strategic and long-term thinking. Another thing I like about these kind of characters, and this is something that early beta readers of Dr. Bear reported on, is they can be kind of aloof. Something that one of my early readers critiqued me on was they said, like, you know, he's got some elements of his personality that make him kind of unlikable in the beginning of the book. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. These characters, to me, they're not part of the celebrated aspects of the culture. When you read Dracula or watch the Bela Lugosi movie, which I genuinely like, Van Helsing is not like a sexy, awesome guy, right? He's not like a George Clooney sauntering in with the cocked eyebrow or like a young Harrison Ford. He's a weird old guy. And our young heroes who represent sort of like the celebrated aspects of the culture, being young and beautiful and vibrant and full of all this life energy, he's not like that at all, right? He's this withdrawn, kind of strange, aloof, maybe a little arrogant, maybe not that socially graceful person. And that's something I wanted to bring to his character as well. Like he's a really nice guy, and he really is trying to do good for everybody around him. But there's a line in early in the book where someone makes a supposition about some kind of occult element, and he like condescendingly laughs at them. He's like, "Oh no, you don't know what you're talking about," you know. And he walks away muttering to himself, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe he said that." Right? Again, not being a jerk, just being kind of a distant, privileged scholar. I think of characters I mentioned in the last episode, the movie The Horror Express, and there's two characters in there, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee's characters, Dr. Wells and Sir Alexander Saxton, respectively. They're not like super friendly, charming people. They're kind of like, there's even a line where one of the characters, like the premise of the movie is like there's like a shape-shifting monster that's sort of like slowly taking over this train. And one of the characters says to Peter Cushing, he's like, "Well, how do we know you're not the monster?" He says, "Monster? I'm British, you know." So I love that element of this character. And I think this also points to, and this is where I'll close on this kind of character, I have a fascination with, and I have for like about like 15, 20 years now, maybe even longer, in an unscholarly way, refer to as the weirdo in the woods character. And this is somebody who shows up in a lot of fairy tales, is like it's like a witch in the woods or it's an old man in the woods. And I think of like a good example is the story of the Ash Lad fairy tale, where Ash Lad is the youngest of three brothers, and the dad sends sends them off to go do something. I forget what they have to do, but they have to go through the woods to find some kind of thing that will help the family. And the oldest brother goes into the woods, comes across this witch, which says, "I wouldn't go that way, I'd go that way." And the brother's like, "What are you talking about?" Right? I don't even know if it's a witch. I think it's just like an old woman. And he's like, "What are you talking about, old lady? You're just a, you know, ugly old lady. I'm not going to listen to you." And he goes the way he wants to go, and he gets killed. Second brother goes into the woods, comes into the old lady. "I wouldn't go that way, I'd go that way. Shut up, old woman. Old people don't know anything." Goes the other way, gets killed. Ash Lad listens to the old lady because he's a foolish character, the foolish hero who listens to the weirdo in the woods, and he succeeds in the mission in an unexpected way. I find that image very charming. I love the idea of wisdom existing in places that aren't obvious and are, in a way, subverting the overculture, to use Clarissa Pinkola Estes's phrase. And it's the same kind of premise behind things like Ewoks, which I know are like, you know, very charged image for people. People don't like them. But what I love about them is like, yeah, you wouldn't expect this adorable little tribe of people to be so dangerous and kind of bloodthirsty in a way. And the key to succeeding in the story. So the Sage Hero represents that for me too. They are, this is Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, right? It's like, nobody respects the guy. Everybody's like, "Oh, it's you again. You are such a pain in the butt." But he's the guy who has the knowledge that they need to do the thing. Hobbits, you know, who would think that these are the guys who are going to take down the biggest, most evil monster of all time? The Sage Hero is that for me, too. The Sage Hero, Cup from Transformers the movie, is kind of a Sage Hero. The old, beat-up, rusty old robot who just can't stop telling stories. But his storytelling actually winds up helping the hero, the young hero, who represents the vital aspect of our culture, right? This is the guy we all want to be like. Nobody wants to be the crusty old guy. So I wanted to do, like, as the story developed, like, I realized that what was emerging was, oh, I'm telling the story of the weird old aloof guy who doesn't have any powers of his own, but through patience, curiosity, some cunning, and a little bit of a desire to grow, he can find what is necessary in order to overcome the problem. Not by picking it up and throwing it into a pit, not by, you know, having some kind of titanic third act laser battle or magic contest, but I guess that's another thing too, right? It's like there's something that has to come from inside of these characters. I think of Fright Night and Roddy McDowall holding up the cross to the vampire, and you think, okay, cool, he's got the totem. He's got the thing that can make the vampire go, and run away. But then the vampire says to him, you got to have faith for that to work on me. And so Roddy McDowall has to dig deep to find out what's inside him. And it's not strength, and it's not magic powers. It's some kind of willfulness within himself. Like, that, like, really registered with me as a child too. And again, as a child, I was like, that's unfair. he should be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, have a machine gun full of, you know, holy water or something. But that kind of quiet contest is something I find really appealing as well. And I wanted to do something that, like, delivers all of the satisfying action that I wanted in stories as a child, but take me past it to say, but it's really about this. It's really about that moment when the vampire says, you got to have faith. And the character has to find out, well, what does that mean? What is the thing I need? I have to look for in myself to help me rise to this occasion. So I think that's a non-spoilery way of talking about the journey that my little hero goes through in The Inscrutable Dr. Bear and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue. And with that, I will close and say thank you for listening. If you made it this far, thank you so much. I'm glad this was interesting enough to stick through to the end. And if you thought this was interesting, I think you'll like the book, drbear.com, drbear.com. That's where you can pre-order it at the time of this recording. If you're listening to this after September of 2024, it's in stores now. Go get it. Go to your local bookstore, comic book store, whatever kind of book ordering platform of your choice, and you can find it. And thank you for getting it. And I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
Today, Orko was being chased by an evil robot. Orko was very frightened, but in the end, he overcame his fear and helped He-Man defeat the robot. All of us are frightened at one time or another, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Fear is natural. It makes us aware of possible danger. Without fear, we'd wind up in all kinds of trouble. So never feel guilty because you're afraid. Listen to your fears. They'll help you stay out of trouble. Until later. Bye now.